This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Scotland Outdoors Podcast from BBC Radio Scotland.
We have a saying in the beekeeping community or a phrase called bee fever, and it's a real thing. It's this uncontrollable obsession with bees. So we came in.
Of course, it's
absolutely true. And I came into this this crazy world really to produce honey for myself, and I became obsessed with bees and their world.
And boy, does he mean it. That's Dr. Gino Jabbar, the owner of Simply Honey, a honey and bee company in Edinburgh. Now, he's a trained honey sommelier and runs events for those eager to learn how the taste differs depending on the season and the location of the bees. I'm Rachel Stewart, and for this edition of Scotland Outdoors, I met up with him close to a community beehive in Edinburgh for my very own masterclass.
So what we're going to do is we're going to take a sample of honey out of the jar, and we're going to carefully place it inside our effectively small wine glasses.
We are in Edinburgh, so you can expect this whole thing to be quite posh. You've got crystal glasses here.
Only the best. And because there are volatile aroma compounds in honey, and they're of different solubilities in water, and also different sizes, so these compounds, similar to compounds in perfume, because honey is very dry, so honey's usually less than 18% water, those aroma molecules are stuck in the honey, in the crystal structure. And what we're doing is, using a spoon, is we're just opening the honey up, pushing it against the sides of the glass, and then holding the underside of the glass with our hand to warm it with our body heat. And what this does is it starts to evaporate off those wonderful aroma compounds for us to experience on the nose.
So you've just scraped a little bit of honey from one of your jars into the crystal glass. You're giving it a nice stir around the glass just now and holding it to heat it up a little.
Absolutely. Then what we do is we inhale, we smell the honey, and this gives us information on sometimes of major nectars, but also it can inform us of the taste as well.
Now, some of these honeys are from the same location, but from a different time during the year, is that right?
That's correct. So what one of the factors that affects the flavours and aromas of honey is the time of year, as well as the location. At different times of the year, different flowers are in bloom, and so you're getting different nectars coming into the hive. And so these are harvested at different times of the year to produce different varieties. Or you can have bees in a different location where there's different flora in the landscape, and so you'll get different flavours.
And it makes a real difference to the taste, does it? Or is it quite subtle?
It's really different, because honey is the taste of the landscape. Honey as a food is a food which has the greatest variety of flavours and aromas of any food type, because the flavour in honey derives from the flowers the bees are visiting, and also non-flower sources like honeydew from different insects like aphids. And if you think of the completely amazing number of flowers that exist on Earth, you get honeys that are sour, that are bitter, umami. You've got then all different types of aromas as well. So where we're used to wonderful food groups such as wine, and there has such a variety in wine, in the end of the day, wine is still confined to the wonderful types of grapes. But with honey, you have so many, almost countless numbers of potential plants that can contribute to the flavour.
And is there a honey for everyone, Gino?
Yes.
Because I would say, and confession time here, that if I was having toast, I probably wouldn't naturally put honey on it. I'm sorry to admit this, but it's true. Because I don't really like things that are incredibly sweet. But would you say that there is an option out there for me?
Yes, absolutely. And there is definitely a honey for everyone. I mean, some varieties are not very sweet. Some are bitter, as I've mentioned. Some are sour. And so you'll find a flavour for you. So this honey is rapeseed honey from East Lothian. And it has a quite strong vegetal taste to it and smell. The smell is quite distinctive for rapeseed. It's a slight smell of cabbage, because the family Brassica napus is related to cabbages, and so, but the actual taste is slightly different. It's a really sweet, buttery textured honey, and it's delightfully confectionery sweet.
Okay, so shall I have a little smell? I can actually smell exactly what you're saying. It does smell a bit like the rapeseed.
Yes, and do you want to try some?
Yes, please.
Intensely sweet.
Very, very sweet. Very, very sweet. Very, very smooth.
Smooth and buttery on the palate.
It tastes quite indulgent.
It is, it is. And this honey is very popular and honey in Scotland. We have and we grow so much rapeseed for its oil. And the presence of bees on the fields of rapeseed also boosts the harvest. Because although rapeseed is a wind-pollinated crop, having bees actually improves the harvest for the farmer as well. So we're also helping out our friends in farming.
Yeah, that's really delicious. You can imagine how lovely that would be on some toast.
So we always suggest that one of the best ways to experience rapeseed honey is to put it on toast. And that's because it's normally presented in what's called soft set form. And
which means it's not a nightmare to get out of the jar.
Yes. So this honey it crystallises quite rapidly when it's first brought out of a beehive. So a beehive is roughly, blood temperature is about 35 centigrade. When honey's in the beehive, it's usually in liquid form. But when the beekeeper removes it, at that point, it starts to want to crystallise. And honey is supposed to be crystallised. That is, there's so much sugar in honey relative to water that sugar cannot all dissolve in the water. So it starts to form bonds together, the sugar molecules, to create a crystal. And it's just how long it takes to form a crystal is one of the properties of a honey. So this particular one, rapeseed, is well known for crystallizing very quickly. And it's because it's very high in glucose relative to fructose sugar. And so what beekeepers do is they prepare it in a form called soft set. That texture is wonderful because, like a good ice cream, you can't actually taste the crystals. The crystals are smaller than your tongue can perceive.
Yeah,
and that
very
gives
smooth.
That beautifully buttery-like texture.
Let's move on to the next one. I'm liking this because, unlike wine tasting, you don't have to spit anything out.
That's right. There's no spittoon here. Okay, so the next one we're going to try, this is actually cut comb. So cut comb it's honeycomb that's just been cut and placed in a container. So it's not been, the honey's not been extracted out of the honeycomb, the wax rather, and placed in a jar. So this is yellow clover, and yellow clover has got a really light floral odour and slight aromatic odour as well. So,
and quite different from the rapeseed one.
Yes. What's wonderful about honeycomb is the wax itself is paper thin, and it conveys an additional aroma and an additional texture to honey. Honeycomb in the past was the main way that we would consume honey. And clover in particular has been one of the most important and largest of harvests in the past of honey in the UK. And so if you go back to honey shows before the 60s, you'll see that a lot of honeycomb was presented, mainly of clover, white clover. So it's a slightly different flower.
And the honeycomb itself is really attractive to look at.
It is. So depending on the flower, the colour of the wax will change slightly. But the fresh beeswax is pure white. And that's what you see on the honeycomb, is the pure white cappings. So would you like to try some?
I would. Let's have a taste.
It's very ticklishly floral, is how I like to put it.
Yeah, that is quite
really
floral.
Nice cinnamon flavour to it.
It is, and I like that you get a little bit of the wax in it as well.
And there's a bit of the wax.
It tastes quite delicate, I think.
It is a very delicate honey. And that brings me to a really interesting point as well, is that it's important to harvest honey in effectively small batches, because as nectar comes in and it's dried to produce honey from one flower, that flower will then close and another flower will then open. So you're getting a mixture of different nectars normally. So if you're only harvesting honey once a year, you're getting effectively a natural blend of all the flowers in that one area. But the delicate flowers like clover are going to be completely wiped out by stronger tasting honey varieties, more flavoursome flowers in the environment. So our friends in Europe that are producing things like acacia honey, pseudo-acacia, which is a well-loved, very weak-tasting honey. Because it's weak-tasting, if there's other flows that happen in close proximity, it can completely change the flavour, even if it truly does have still a lot of that acacia in it. And it's the same for any weak honey, really.
So for the clover honey, what might you eat that with? Like, I mean, again, I suppose you could put it on toast.
I think it's lovely I'd say it's just lovely with Greek yogurt. You know, I think it's wonderful. And also because it's a weaker honey, not as intense in smell as well, you want to have it with delicate things, because you won't be able to taste the aromas from the clover honey.
Yeah, nothing that overpowers it.
That's right.
And are people quite surprised when they try these different types of honey then?
Oh yes, definitely. In fact, a number of people will say, oh, I don't like the taste of honey. Because most people haven't tasted quality honey in their life. And we are conditioned from a young age to think of honey as really a cheap sweetener, a condiment, when really it's nothing like that. Honey is this most amazing food, and it has so many different flavours associated with it that when you try a quality honey, the flavour just is amazing. Unfortunately, there's a huge amount of food crime in the world, and honey is the third most adulterated or fraudulent food produced on earth, unfortunately. And the Scottish beekeepers had the pleasure of inviting Professor Norberto Garcia, who leads the economic division of APAMONDIA, which is the World Beekeeping Council, and he informed us of the extent of honey frauds, that unfortunately every year the amount of honey harvested is actually going down, but the amount of honey actually sold on the market is going up. And the only way that's possible is if some of that honey isn't pure.
Okay, so what does that mean then? It's being mixed with other things or what?
There's so many different ways, and I'm not an expert in honey fraud. It could be just sugar and sugar water. It could be real honey from other countries that are cheaper, that are blended in. The right country of origin is not stated on the label. So there's a whole myriad of things that it could be.
And is this effectively just to keep the price down?
Yeah, I think part of the problem is price. I think more specifically the question that what the public not really aware of is that honey is a really expensive product to produce. In fact, I would say it's the most expensive food item in your kitchen, except if you own a quality bottle of Scotch whiskey.
And what makes it so expensive?
The cost of materials are expensive, the hives, the cost of feeds, the cost of any medication to support the bees through illness. And because most beekeeping, in fact, is moving heavy boxes from an apiary where bees are contained to a place where the honey is processed. So it's either heavy boxes of bees or honey. And so that's all by car. It's very difficult to do it otherwise. And so you have a lot of transport costs. There's not kind of cheap starting materials like you would have in other industries. And so that's one of the big issues with particularly Scottish honey. And remember that our climate is not the warmest of climates and the most brightly illuminated. And therefore, we don't produce the same quantities in our harvest like our friends in continental Europe or in the United States, just because of the climate. And that has an effect also on price. So, moving on, we will now have a taste of Edinburgh.
They do differ in colour a bit as well, don't they?
Yes. So Edinburgh, most of the honey that I harvest in Edinburgh derives mainly from trees, and that's partly why it's a slightly darker colour, but it depends really on what the flower is. So in spring, we've got hawthorn. We do have sycamore trees, which flower in May, and we also have this honey was harvested about June time, mid-June, so there is a little bit of sweet chestnut. And so together, it's not a pure monofloral, this honey, it's a multifloral, but it's a real experience. So have a smell.
Oh yeah.
Very dark.
It is dark. It's dark. Quite powerful.
Sweet, there's a sort of sour initial smell, and you've got this woodiness and smokiness to it. And the flavour is very similar. It's one of the wonderful things about this multifloral.
Now that's definitely got a more powerful flavour.
Quite powerful, yeah. You've got this sort of depth of flavour, this woodiness, the smokiness, and then you also have this persistence of the flavour. It's really a taste of sweet chestnut right at the end, which is kind of like sugared nuts. And it's if you've tasted sweet chestnut honey from Italy, you'll know it. It's a really quite a wonderful honey, this one.
Yeah, it's a delicious taste, actually. So again, what would you put that on?
This one is wonderful with cheese. This is great with the light cheeses like ricotta, and because it gives that balance. And you can also put it again on weekly tasting foods like yogurts and stuff like that.
Yeah, but it can handle some stronger flavours.
This one can handle stronger flavours.
We're pausing for a second there because you're suggesting that I should be cleansing my palate.
Yes. So with all of these wonderful honeys that we're tasting, your taste buds can just get completely overwhelmed. So a sip of water and a bland cracker or oat cake or even a Granny Smith apple just helps to cleanse the palate.
Good tip. How does honey work with oat cake?
Oh, it's delicious.
Of course, I knew you were going to say that, Gino.
Yeah.
Right, what are we trying now?
Now we're going to move on to summer. I want you to imagine summer.
I've forgotten what summer was like, but
absolutely.
Maybe this will remind me.
Okay. So this honey is a taste of Edinburgh summer.
Okay.
So if you want to just have a wee smell. Do you smell the sort of citrusy mentholic?
That is quite citrusy, yep.
Yeah. And have a taste. Really fruity. Mm.
You definitely
citrusy.
Get that kick of menthol.
It's really bright mentholic. So the menthol is deriving from lime, tilia, and it's classic. That this is the signature of this tree. We have a lot of lime trees in Edinburgh and different varieties of lime tree as well. And so, although this is not a monofloral honey, because it's such a large nectar producer, it does tend to dominate the flavour. And then the fruitiness around it are all the other flowers that are in the environment, the brambles and all the other things. So it really gives quite a punchy, actually, and fruity explosion, this honey. And I would suggest using it with cheddar cheese.
Is that your favourite?
That's my personal favourite and tip. It really complements the tang of cheddar.
Mm-hmm. I really like it because it doesn't taste too sweet.
Yes, that's true.
Nice. That's so lovely.
This one, this next one is...
That's quite a dark colour.
This is quite a dark one, and it can go almost black, actually, in colour. I like to call this a dessert honey. This is the sticky toffee pudding of the honey world. So have a smell. It has a little bit of the citrus taste, similar to the summer. This is late summer blossom. Okay. And it produces a wonderful flavour similar to treacle.
Yeah.
It's very treacly. And there's also a little hints of pine in there as well. So this is a mix of blackberry or bramble and also honeydew. So honeydew doesn't come from plants, or rather it comes from plants indirectly. Aphids on trees are sucking out from the vessels of plants their phloem sugars. They completely gorge themselves in the sugar of plant off the trees, and they spit out these honeydew droplets, and the bees collect that and they refine it. And you get a flavour of that tree as well as that insect. And so that's what this is. It's very rare, this honey.
It's really nice.
It's really nice.
Again, quite an intense flavour.
Quite intense, yeah.
It feels like, and I don't know if you're allowed to do this, if you're allowed to bake with it, but it feels like the kind of thing you might put in a cake.
Yes, I mean, you can. Of course you can bake with honey.
I wasn't sure if that was allowed, given how special this honey is.
No, I wouldn't. Well, normally people would bake with what's called baker's honey. Baker's honey is a form of honey. So if it's between 20 and 25% in water, your honey can still be sold, but it can't be sold as honey. It has to be sold as baker's honey, and there has to be also an indication on the label that this is only intended for cooking. And that's because yeasts are growing and there's a slight risk to human health, I suppose, if you eat it directly. But no, that's normally the fate of honey, which is slightly wet, is it gets used in industrial commercial food.
How did you get into this? Because obviously I can tell you're very passionate about it.
I think I've always loved honey. And when I was travelling, I would always, you know, buy a jar of honey, as you do with all the other trinkets that you buy as a tourist. And I just thought, this stuff is magic. It tastes great. And I thought, well, one day it'd be really interesting to produce honey. And that day came about 10 years ago. And I did a beginner's course. And then I discovered that my neighbour was a beekeeper. And so I helped her. And for about 2 years, I learned the craft of beekeeping mainly from my mentor and doing courses. And it just kind of exploded. We have a saying in the beekeeping community or a phrase called bee fever, and it's a real thing. It's this uncontrollable obsession with bees. So we came in.
Of course.
It's absolutely true. And I came into this this crazy world really to produce honey for myself, and I became obsessed with bees and their world. But then it was, I found out about this training in Italy, and going on it was a real eye-opener, because over on the continent, I think that the understanding of honey comes more from a food background, whereas here in the UK we have a very strong and long tradition of agricultural shows like the Highland Show and the Great Yorkshire Show and many other shows, and bees would be exhibited there. And alongside that, you would have the crafts, and honey would be part of that. So we have a tradition that, as far as I can work out, of pageantry and of testing the skills of the beekeeper. Whereas on the continent, they're less so interested in that. It's more about the aromas, the tastes of honey. It's treated more like food. And I think that was an eye-opener, to return to food as opposed to just a byproduct of beekeeping. And so you'll find that a lot of the judges on the continent, not all of them, but there are people more from a chef cuisine background. And that was an eye-opener as well. And I suppose because the technique of honey sensory analysis is not really that different to what has been developed in the wine industry, and now for cheese, and also for whiskey and all these other amazing foods. So it's quite universal. And also from someone like myself who actually comes from a scientific background, and I've never really done any training on my palate before, and to actually be thrown in that deep end and realise that I can't taste anything in it on the beginner's course, and then you practice and you train, and it's just amazing. You start to be able to perceive these things. So yeah. what are we left to do? So we've got one more. This is my Scottish Borders heather honey.
Okay.
And this,
again, it's quite dark.
This is a dark honey, and it's a well-loved honey here in Scotland because we have so much ling heather, and ling heather is Calluna vulgaris, has a very distinctive, strong taste. This is heather blend, and what that means is it's not a very pure ling heather. There are other flowers there. One of the special properties of ling heather is it's a gel. It's called thixotropic. So its physical state is neither liquid nor solid. And so you get this beautiful, usually dark red gel-like texture with a very pure ling heather. But if there's other plants there, like rosemary willow herb or meadow sweet, which flowers usually at the same time, or even bell heather, which is the other wonderful heather we have in Scotland, that will actually change the physical state and it won't have that wonderful gel-like texture. But it doesn't mean that the flavour is any worse or there's any issue with it. It's still absolutely wonderful. So this honey has a wonderful vinegary sort of smell.
Yes, it does. So not quite so sweet.
And it has quite a distinctive caramel taste, this honey.
Now, to me, that's the honey that I'm probably most familiar with.
Yes, and it's also, depending on the location, ling can be quite bitter as well. And as you become, I think, more obsessed with honey, you start to like bitter honeys more and more. So this is one of our most famous honeys, and it's because it's also got a very strong taste. People in Scotland and in the UK, they know this honey more than other varieties.
Yeah, that, as I say, that's the one that feels most familiar to me.
Absolutely. So but the last honey I would like you to try is not one of my own. I call it an endangered honey.
Okay.
In Scotland. So this honey has the most beautiful yellow colour. And have a wee smell. It's not the most delightful of smells.
Yeah, again, quite a strong, pungent smell.
Very pungent, almost like ammonia, and almost like a horse stable as well. It has, though, the most beautiful foam-like texture. Mm. But the taste...
It's almost like toffee in consistency.
It's wonderful. Do you get notes of chamomile and apricots? Mm-hmm. Can you guess what this honey is?
No, what is it?
This is dandelion.
Is it?
This is dandelion honey. Mm. And this is produced by some beekeepers in Scotland, but not in pure form. Dandelion, as you know, is flowers in March. It's very early, and the weather tends to not be in our favour in Scotland. But this is one of the important early flowers for our bees and for all pollinators in Scotland and in the UK in general.
That is a delicious honey, and it is such a gorgeous apricot-y type colour.
It is. It's absolutely wonderful.
But that's your particular favourite, is it?
One of my favourites is dandelion.
Do you think the consumers are becoming more knowledgeable about what is out there and what they could be getting if they were to search for it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think because we have improved so much with our culinary knowledge in Scotland, people are now questioning what other varieties of different foods we can get and what are those flavours and how can we use them. So, absolutely.
And of course, people are definitely more interested in where the products are actually coming from.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And the other thing is, honey is sustainably produced and it's local. And if we go back before the days of cane sugar, which I believe derives from India, this is the natural, sweet, sustainable sweetener that people consumed. And we have a whole history going back into before history, prehistory, of mankind consuming honey, being quite obsessed with honey. And we just have to look at holy books and books of wisdom. Honey always is described both as an important food, but also a medicine. And there's still so much work to be done on the medical effects of honey. But we have a very strong tradition across the whole globe of honey being not just a food, but a guardian of health, of good health.
Dr. Gino Jabbar there. And if you want to read more about his work, then there's more information on his website, simplyhoney.co. I hope you enjoyed listening to this. Do get in touch if you have any comments you would like to share. You can email us at outofdoors@bbc.co.uk. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.